This is Roland Berger.
Roland Berger.
Roland Berger.
Bonjour, je m'appelle Marwan et vous écoutez le podcast Roland Berger People Insights.
Hello and welcome to episode number 4 of the Roland Berger People Insights podcast. My name is Ben. I am a communications manager at Roland Berger and also the host of this podcast. Today's guest is Marwana, a sharp-minded consultant and project manager by profession and a powerlifter by passion. Learn more about Marwana's inspiring path from lazy kid to a successfully competing powerlifter and how passion, discipline and focus can shape your career and character to push your own limits to completely new boundaries. Get ready to be inspired. Hi Marwana, it's nice to have you here today. And for the beginning, let's start with the tradition of having some warm-up questions. Coffee or protein shake to start the day?
Coffee, without a doubt. I keep supplements minimal.
Do you have a go-to hype song before a big lift or a big meeting?
Plenty, actually, but I would go for the commander speech from Attack on Titan, where he turns his troops' fear into commitment. That's perfect before either a heavy pull or a tough steering committee.
What's one thing people would be surprised to learn about you?
I was an overweight, very nerdy kid who hated physical effort before.
Deadlift, bench, or squat? Which one's your favorite and why?
Undoubtedly deadlift, because to me it's a full system commitment where you have to override the brain's nope alarm and go anyway. That's truly fascinating in my opinion.
Thank you very much. Now it's about your personal journey into consulting. What do we do at Roland Berger?
At Roland Berger, I'm a PM, a project manager in the energy and utilities team in Paris. I conduct mostly due diligence and strategic plans for clients in the energy and utilities team and sometimes a bit above, more generally in the infra. It's been 3 years today, actually. I joined 3 years ago, always in the energy and utilities team. And before that, I was a consultant in a boutique firm that was also specialized in energy purposes.
Mm-hmm. Great. So happy anniversary. Can you work us through your path at Roland Berger a little bit?
Okay. So I studied engineering at École Polytechnique in France, and then I did a master at Stanford. At the time, I thought I'd go into research and because I loved science. I only took science classes. But actually, a lab internship taught me I would say, decision cycles. So I joined the boutique energy strategy firm where I learned the industry in the trenches, and then I moved to Roland Berger to scale that work across energy, mobility, and infra. I've been promoted project manager 1 month ago this July, so I'm getting to lead bigger teams and own the answer end-to-end, which relates to why consulting at the beginning.
What inspired you to pursue a career in consulting?
My dad was a consultant before for a very long time, and when I was younger, actually, I noticed now that the long drives were basically case studies interviews, where he would point out at McDonald's and ask how many people eat there at lunch. We would break it into lanes, cars turn over, and so on. It was really fun, so I think it conditioned me a bit to become a consultant.
What do you enjoy most about being a consultant?
I would say three things. First one is learning new things, whether hard skills, soft skills, knowledge on every project. That's very important for me. I don't like the routine, the knowledge, I would say. Second is the opportunity to advise C-level people who deeply care about your opinion and recommendation. I think it's really rewarding and it's not the case in a lot of jobs or companies, I would say. And the last one is everything related to pedagogy, teaching the younger consultants what I've been taught, but more importantly, what I haven't been taught to allow them to improve better.
That sounds like a great topic. What key lessons have you learned throughout your consulting journey so far?
Again, I think three main lessons. First one is your opinion matters to the client because you're bringing a fresh eye. I didn't know it when I was younger. I thought I wouldn't teach anything to the client, but actually they're so deep rooted in their routine that you actually do with your fresh eye. Second is if something seems off or hardly understandable, then it's probably the case. It's not that you don't understand, it's something's wrong. And the last thing, which kind of disappointed me, I would say, at the beginning, but now I understand it, is that the way you're communicating the message is as important or more important than the message itself. Because as a science guy, I used to think that the answer was the final goal and there is just one truth. But in real life, there is no truth. It's very dependent on every one of us. So the way you're communicating is much more important.
Speaking the same language.
Exactly, exactly. Once you have the answer, you have to convince the client that the answer is correct.
So now we switch a little bit about to the powerlifting passion. How did you first get into powerlifting?
It's a funny story. I lifted casually for years, like typical gym rat, I would say. Then I went to a more serious gym where a coach that was half my size outlifted me by a mile. So it exposed the gap between looking strong and actually being strong. So my competitive brain, I would say, switched on and I got into powerlifting, which consists of lifting the heaviest weights possible in squat, bench, and deadlift.
Mm-hmm. So how does it differ from regular bodybuilding? And as you said, you go to the gym, everyone thinks about heavy weights, but there's something special about it, right?
This is true. Actually, there is a difference that not a lot of people understand is that bodybuilding is about developing the muscle mass and being as lean as possible in an aesthetic goal, while powerlifting does not care about aesthetics at all. We just want to be as strong as possible on the three lifts. Obviously, muscle mass is very important to be strong because, I mean, there is a correlation between strength and muscle mass. But being the leanest actually is even counterproductive strength-wise.
It is probably more difficult and more dangerous than traditional bodybuilding because of the weights, correct?
I think the trainings are much more difficult in powerlifting because you go in the rep range below 3 to 4 reps per set. So this is usually where technique breaks down and where you get injury risks. And also it takes a lot of mental strength to convince yourself to lift heavy weights because your brain sends a lot of signals not to do it because it's literally afraid to die. Unlike bodybuilding, when you're in the rep range of between 8 and 12, even more, so you basically don't get injured if you do things properly. However, bodybuilding is much more difficult outside the gym when it comes to the diet, where they are much more strict because they want to stay as lean as possible, whereas we're a bit more lenient. We just need to, I mean, if I'm being a bit sketchy, we just need to eat enough, I would say, for the energy.
I think that junk food is still off the table, right?
Off the table, but I don't use a scale to weigh my food typically.
Do you have a plan for the week basically for your diet? Or is it just like, today I do this, tomorrow I do this, more relaxed?
No, I'm more relaxed, but also I was in bodybuilding before meeting the guy I mentioned, the coach. So I now intuitively know when to eat, how much to eat of each type of food. So I don't do it anymore. But when you're not very knowledgeable about it, yes, you have to be more strict. But I think the main driver is just the amount of calories that you have every day. When I don't eat enough, I'd simply pass out during the trainings, and that's dangerous.
Yeah, that sounds not healthy. So can you tell me a little bit about your training routine? How does it look like during a typical week?
Yes, so I train 5 times a week, once on Sunday and 4 times during the work week. I try not to interfere with work. So I either train between 5:30 to 8 in the morning, or after 9 to 10 p.m. until 12 in the evening. And that's basically it. Whenever someone starts the gym, everyone will tell him on Monday you hit chest, on Tuesday you hit back, and then you hit legs and so on. In powerlifting, it's not the case at all. We structure the trainings around the main three lifts. So the trainings look like today you're going to train squat and bench, and then you're going to do some bodybuilding that will help you on the powerlifting exercises that you train this day. So it would look like Monday, squat, bench, then leg exercises, then triceps exercises. The next day would be deadlift and back exercises and so on. So the frequency of each muscle is much higher than in bodybuilding.
Have you competed professionally? And what is the experience like?
I have. I've been competing professionally for 4 years now, between 1 to 2 times per year, depending on the life period I was in, I would say. Last time was 1 month ago, where I totaled 745 kg. That places me, I think, 18th nationally and 400th worldwide. I would say that competitions are always amazing. That's why people compete. No one will tell you they don't like to compete. In powerlifting, I think they're an event where you can gather with your peers. We are not that many very heavy lifters, I would say, in general, especially in commercial gyms. So you get to gather together. And you can truly express yourself, I would say, because in the commercial gyms, you tend to a bit, I would say, downsize the extent of your emotions, I would say. And related to the competitions, they're very demanding because you have referees, which you don't have at the gym, and the rules are very strict. So in essence, it's very hard, if not impossible, to reproduce your training personal records. And for me, it's very humbling because your ego tends to inflate at the gym and then you go back to reality in competition. So for me, every competition is like, plus 5 years of humility and experience, I would say.
Does the adrenaline help at the competition, or is it something that, you know,
you have, maybe you have sweaty hands and you're excited, but also you have sweaty hands and you have to fight to do that clean lift, because it's also dangerous, as you said. You know, you have these super heavy weights you have to lift. So small things like this that are usually an annoyance can be really dangerous in that moment, right? How do you deal with that?
That's true. So you have plenty of spotters that ensure your safety during the competition. So actually, it's safer to lift during the competition than in commercial gyms. And then you have, I think, two types of profiles for the athletes. You have people who react well to the adrenaline, a bit like me, and tend to overperform in competition. I think that would be between 5 and 10% of the athletes. And then you have the other ones who tend to mentally break during the competition because you have an audience, you have referees, you have a different bars, different weights. Even they look different, they feel different. So everything that you know in your commercial gyms, you don't have it here. Even where the walls are, you know, your perception of space is completely different. So people, I think most people tend to, I would say, break down. And then the other difficulty of the competitions is that you have to max out the three lifts the same day, which never happens in training. This never happens in training because that's way too taxing. For example, my last competition was 1 month ago and I still feel it now. My lifts are very poor right now as I'm still a bit achy because it's very traumatizing. So that additional difficulty also is hard to handle because the heaviest and most taxing lift, which is the deadlift, comes at the end after squat and bench. You're exhausted. You literally just want to go home and sleep. And this is where you have to push extra. So all of it make the competitions very, very hard. But I think that's what makes them valuable and memorable.
So when you Google powerlifting on YouTube, then you see those video clips where people trying to lift up those unbelievable heavy weights and they're shaking and there are also some accidents. So is this something that happens from time to time? Because people are very motivated to make those lifts on the competition. Do people go too far? What do you think?
You're right. It's scary, but it's also very rare. I think they have exposures in social media. It never happens in the competition. I've never seen it, never happened to me. You can get injured in training, that happens. But usually it's not very dramatic injuries. It's like, you know, a muscle is a bit tense, so it hurts. Your knee is a bit achy because it's inflamed, things like that. But it's never those, you know, very impressive injuries. That doesn't happen.
What's your proudest moment as a powerlifter?
One is actually the latest competition where I climbed to the upper ladder of the national rankings and also in international ranking. So I was very proud of it because I've been waiting for it for a long time. And the second is the acknowledgments of the sport by my parents, because they attended a competition 2 years ago for the first time. They've been very skeptical until then, and they just wanted to witness it with their own eyes. And so they came from Morocco to Paris to witness it. And at the end, I remember my dad saying right after the competition, he said, I quote, "Now I understand it's not about lifting weights. It's about overcoming fear." And that's exactly what it is. And it meant much more than any number on the bar.
That really sounds like a special moment. The next question is a little bit more about how you balance work and training, how you fit it all together. Because every day just has 24 hours. So how do you stay motivated? How do you manage your energy level? Maybe you can elaborate a little bit more about that.
Yes, to be honest, yes, it is. So the schedule I gave you is with a period with no rushes or peaks. And that's sustainable because I get to sleep, I would say, 7 to 8 hours. Sleep is very important. However, whenever consulting takes a larger share of the work, I either sleep less, which I don't advise, and I just adapt the trainings not to get injured because I slept less, and I go to a gym that is open 24/7, or I simply reschedule the trainings to the weekend, which I also avoid because doing so also means less social events with your partner, with your friends, and so on. So I try to balance everything out. It's not easy, to be honest, but so far it's been working. The decision algorithm is always as follows: work first, then I would say training and social events at the same level, and sleep is the one that takes a toll.
How does Roland Berger support you in balancing both worlds better?
Roland Berger has been great. Before competition, they let me fit the trainings into saner hours when possible. So in the afternoon, even if it means working late, I would rather train in the afternoon with the extra caffeine and then train at work late with less caffeine so that I can sleep better. And the support is really huge. I didn't expect that much. And then it lets me bring full energy to both worlds instead of pretending one does not exist.
What skills or mindsets from powerlifting help you in consulting, if any?
There are two. First is the emotion self-control during competitions, as I mentioned, because you get to be very doubtful. And during hidden steering committees, not to lose composure and to stay calm. And the second one is the rigor, obviously, because you need to be very rigorous, whether in training or in your analysis, either when doing them or presenting them. So I think consulting and powerlifting are a bit similar, just in the different worlds.
How do you handle setbacks, whether it's in the sports or client engagement?
So I would say that thing is, powerlifting is about delayed gratification, to be honest. It often happens to stall for several months, even years, even 1-2 years, happened to me very often, before getting much stronger all of a sudden. And you don't know why, but actually you just compounded all the work you've done, and then it just expresses itself at some point. So when you know that this is how it works, you actually enjoy fading, because you understand it's getting you closer to the goal. There is a quote that says, if you knew how many times you had to fail before succeeding, how fast would you want to fail? It's exactly the same thing. And so you tend to become much more stoic and less prone to reacting negatively to the setbacks. And you just keep putting the work without double overthinking it. I think it's the same for consulting.
How did you cultivate your discipline and mental strengths over the years? Because some people are born with it more than others, but I think it has to grow with you, right? To gain success with powerlifting and in consulting.
You're right. I think there is a misconception between motivation and discipline. They are often mistaken for each other. Motivation comes and goes. It goes much more often than it comes, so you cannot rely on it, especially when you wake up in winter at 5 a.m. to go train. No one wants to do it, even myself, who is passionate. So this is where discipline takes over. And the way I see it is that discipline is a form of self-respect and self-love. It might sound a bit cliche, but that's really true. So whenever I wake up very early, the first things that comes to my mind is, I don't want to go. But then you have to override it with, you have to go because you owe it to yourself. That was the contract at the beginning.
So now it's about culture and inspiration, and a little bit about Roland Berger. How do your colleagues at Roland Berger react to your powerlifting?
It's an interesting question. Most colleagues are supportive and amused, I would say. Because if you take out the powerlifting aspect on paper, I say you wouldn't expect me to do competition when you look at the resume. So people are usually amused. And that's for the consultants population, not the partners population, because I think they just found out about it recently. I've had a lot of very nice comments for the partner saying, I knew you were going to the gym, but I didn't know the extent of which you went to the gym. And as a funny story, one partner once, he joked about my muscles. He thought they were all air. And actually he said, no, they're all iron, not air. It was very funny. On a side note, what I really enjoy, and I didn't expect it, is that people follow my journey, my powerlifting journey now, whether on social media or even at work. They often ask me where I'm heading, how are things going? So it's become part of my identity at work, I would say. Even some of them come to the competitions too.
Mm-hmm. Does it inspire the others to go more often to the gym, or at least go to the gym and eat a little bit more healthy?
I think so. I think it makes people think again about their relationship to sport. And I think they tend to realize that it's possible to combine both, at least on the short term. On the long term, I couldn't tell, because some colleagues told me that they were inspired with such lifestyles. Other that I'm wasting my young years, to quote them, which I fully understand. I mean, everyone makes its own choices, but I've never been happier than in the last couple of years, so I'm fine with it.
Is there someone who inspires you both in consulting and powerlifting?
It's two persons. Consulting and in general, professionally, that's my dad, the one I mentioned at the beginning. And powerlifting is my coach, who is 20% stronger than I am, and I have no idea how he does that. I mean, for me, it's unimaginable to lift even heavier. So I'm really, really inspired by both these guys.
What advice would you give someone trying to balance a demanding job with a serious hobby?
The main pain point to most people is time. They always say, I don't have time, to which I would answer, please audit your time because you leak much more than you think. And second is you should schedule the hobby like a client meeting. Don't make it fit in the cracks. If you do so, you will have time and you will notice you have much more time than you think.
Should they be open about it, or is this something, because many people are afraid, you know, to be open about stuff like this?
It's a very good question. I would advise to be open about it, but I would also advise not to let it interfere with your work. Meaning, here is the situation I would depict. You could tell your PM, hey, I am preparing for a marathon, so I will train from 5 to 7 on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. But the implicit deal is that you have to catch up with those hours so that the quality of your deliverable is still the same if you didn't have it. It shouldn't be at the expense of the deliverable quality, in my opinion. It's just a reshuffle of time. So being open about it to reshuffle the time is fine, as long as it doesn't jeopardize the project.
So what's next for you, either in consulting or in powerlifting?
In consulting, I've been newly promoted to project manager. So I'm simply excited to take on this new role. I'm not looking for longer than or further than the next few months, I would say. I'm just happy to take on it. And on the lifting platform, my goal is to go to the French nationals, which would be equivalent to being at the top 10 in France, or equivalently 800 kilos total. So that's plus 6% strength compared to now. I think it will take me around 1 to 2 years if I don't get injured, fingers crossed.
Coming back to your new role as project manager at Roland Berger, what would you say are the main challenges awaiting you?
In consulting, when you're a project manager, you don't have one client, you have three. The main client, obviously, the one you're working for. The other two clients are the partner and the teams below you that work with you. So you have to satisfy the three counterparts, which is really hard because usually satisfying two comes at the expense of the last one. That's the first challenge. The second is you are now accountable for everything. And if something goes wrong, it's on you, not on your teams. So it's extra, I think it's less analytical work because you don't perform the analysis anymore, but it's much more stress and accountability in checking the work that's been done. So I would say in summary, much more stress, maybe less working hours, but maybe more extended working hours because you're depending on the outputs of everyone. So I'm very happy to see how I'm going to cope with this new equation.
Thank you very much for all the insights so far. So my last question is a more casual question, to be honest. It's about Paris. And do you have a favorite spot you would suggest to colleagues or friends or people who visit the city?
Yeah, it's an underrated spot. It's called Les Invalides. It's a beautiful monument, which also holds the Museum of the Army. And I advise it's very underrated. Maybe you haven't heard about it. Usually people go for Tour Eiffel and so on, but please go to Invalides, especially in the night. It's very beautiful.
Thank you very much, Mavana, for taking the time to record this session with me. If you'd like to know more about Roland Berger, our initiatives and the way we work and what values we are holding up, then visit our career website. And of course, do not forget to follow our social media channels. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Ben, and I'm looking forward to have you on board on the next episode of the Roland Berger People Insights podcast. Have an amazing week. And always remember, be the original you.